Factice Radio. Nominated for Station of the Year. Yeah. Serving the island's community proudly on FM 104.6. Factice Radio, FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
The general election 2024 takes place on the 4th of July, and Vectis Radio has reached out to all parliamentary candidates in both constituencies. Today's parliamentary candidate is
David Grucock for the Isle of Wight East constituency, and you are standing as an independent. Hi, David.
Hello. Yes, I am an independent.
Good afternoon to you. So, we've got about 25 minutes to get through, hopefully, as many questions as possible. I just want to start off, like I've asked all the other candidates, the first 100 days. It's a classic one. The first 100 days of David Grucock MP, if you're elected on Friday morning, what does it look like?
Well, after I've picked myself up from the floor, and I guess we've all said that, haven't we? Yeah, it's going to be difficult because I've never ever done anything like this before. I don't even know how Parliament works, but I'm a quick learner, so I shall certainly, it'll be a learning curve for me. The first 100 days, well, obviously I've got a business to run, so I'd have to sort that out immediately. I haven't even thought about that yet, so that would have to be sorted out. Sort out the staff, where I'm going to go, how's it going to run without me. You know, have I got to sell the business so I just solely concentrate on being an MP, which I guess I have to, because that would be now my main job. Look after the staff, make sure they're all right. So that's the personal side of it. Obviously, you know, say to my wife, well, guess what, I'm the MP for the Isle of Wight. And she said, oh, really? And so that's going to be an interesting conversation. So, yeah, my life will change. Now, once I'm in Westminster, again, I suppose it's getting yourself familiar with how it all works. Obviously, I want to make sure that my connections to the island and the communities, which are really important to me, so I'll keep in touch with all of those, because at the end of the day, I'm acting on behalf of the community. I am their voice in Westminster, and whatever comes up there, I shall bring back to the people on the island. I will want their opinions, take those back, and if there's any laws that need changing, if they're good ones from the Labour government, shall we say, because I'm fairly sure they're going to win the election, I shall back that. If I don't agree with it, then I shall join the opposition and go into their part. But there'll always be a reason for the island. So I will use the Isle of Wight card as much as I can to get as much out of the Parliament that I can for the Isle of Wight, because, hey, I'm your agent.
Thank you. And I suppose, for outlining that, thank you for that. I suppose talking about the different parties and standing almost, well, standing independently, not just through as an independent, but if you're elected to Parliament, making your mind up on a case-by-case basis is kind of my understanding from what you've just described there to me, David. I suppose also, can I just ask you, on the island, there's a lot of councillors in the past that have stood as independents and then they've gone on one side or the other, joining various different political parties of one colour or another. If you were elected on Friday morning, what's your plan in that five-year term? Would you be tempted to join another party, or are you adamant that you're going to stay as an independent true and true?
I would categorically say that I wouldn't join the Conservatives, and I wouldn't join the Labour Party, because they're the two main parties. I definitely wouldn't join those. Would I stay an independent? I would like to think that I would. I've got a lot of green leanings, so if there's any other green MPs in there, I will work with them. You know, I've got great respect over the few weeks that we've done the hustings. I've listened to Vix, and she argues a very good case, and a lot of those issues are what I would take on. So I probably wouldn't join the Green Party, but I would probably vote with them. And I'm hoping there will be some Green MPs. We need change in this country. And, you know, an independent would certainly be a change. I think the last independent was probably about 10, 12 years ago. BBC journalist, he was an independent for 4 years. Yeah, it's unprecedented. They haven't really done very well in general elections, but I want to make history. So let's see what happens.
Thank you. So you bring up the issue of the Green Party. What makes you different to the Green Party, because you're saying you would be happy to work with the Greens and you seem to like them quite a lot. I know it's one thing respecting your opponents and another thing endorsing them. So can you just make it clear why vote for David Grewcock and not the Green Party?
Well, again, I am a local. Obviously, Vix is local as well. I stand for what the island needs. And I don't think the island needs politics particularly. And that's why I'm independent. And I thought, you know, at the moment in Ventnor, we're very much fighting for our existence against island roads and the crazy road closures that we've got in and around Ventnor. Not just in Ventnor, but around the island as well. And somebody needs to be a strong voice. And I think I'm that strong, independent voice. And yeah, so I will keep my independence. And yeah, I've got a lot of green leanings, but I am independent. And I will stay that way.
Thank you, David. I want to move on to the issue of the cost of living crisis. I've asked this question to all of the candidates, from my recollection anyway, and it's an issue, as you are probably only too aware of, on this island. It's huge. The average wage on the island is around 13.8% lower than it is on the other side of the water. And as you may or may not know, rents have gone up and the cost of living has gone up, and it's affected islanders quite a lot. My listeners at home might want the answer to this question, and that is, what's the solution to that? How are you going to try and make people's lives better on this island if you're elected on Friday?
To make people's lives better on the island, that's a hard one, isn't it? Because the island is a special place. We have got high unemployment on the island. We always have been. We've always been lumped in with the rich southeast. So we've never had that extra funding that the island needs. And the island does need extra funding. I would be looking for more funding from central government, levelling up funding if that's still going to exist. The coastal resorts definitely need more investment. Sandown Bay regeneration should include Ventnor as well. Bringing the island up would be the first thing I'd do. Obviously, wages are low on the island, and I don't think they should be. I think there should be a minimum wage, and I think that minimum wage should increase. Obviously, you know, business owners are very wary of that, especially on the island, because, you know, again, running a business on the island is probably more difficult than running it on the mainland. So wages do tend to be lower. And of course, in the care sector, we know historically that care workers get a very low wage, and that isn't right at all. So raising the minimum wage would be one of the things I would look at nationally, but talking to the business people as well, because you've got to realize that it's their livelihoods as well. But if you're bringing the island up and businesses up as well, then they should be able to afford to pay the extra money to the staff.
Absolutely. So can I ask then, you mentioned about the fact that it is more expensive on the island to run a business. I noticed so far, unlike the other candidates, quite refreshingly, you've not mentioned ferries yet. So I'm going to bring it up for you.
All right.
Every single candidate has mentioned the ferries that I have spoken to here. And you may have heard me say this earlier on as well in the Green Room. It almost feels to me like this has become the election for ferries on the island. Is it as simple as dealing with the ferries? Because you hear a lot of people on one side of the fence saying that they're too expensive. But then I'm going to say the same to you that I said to Michael Lilly just a few moments ago, that actually on the other side, you've got people that have business contracts with the ferries, and thus the rates are subsidised. And also, if you need to get NHS treatment, again, it's half price, I think, depending on which service you use. And other people might say, well, if you're a student or you're a teacher, again, you get a discount. And there is an argument to say that, okay, it is more of an upfront cost if you bulk buy, so to speak, if you're none of the above, if you'd pardon the pun. What's the solution? Is it ferries, do you think? Or do we need to tackle the problem that you've just outlined to me? That's wages, the cost of living, and all the other issues as an island, and I suppose that we all share as a country, that we've got to probably unpick first. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think the ferries are too expensive. If you're a visitor coming to the island, you book your accommodation. This has happened to me. on online bookings, you get an online booking, and then within about an hour it's cancelled, and you think, well, why have they cancelled that? And you know why they've cancelled, because they've booked the accommodation first and then they've looked at the price of the ferry, which at certain times of the year can be over £300. Now that is far too expensive. So what would I do with the ferries? Well, I would certainly, there would must be some sort of regulation. Now I know they're private companies and there's an argument to keep them private and there's an argument to nationalise them. Well, Redfern's always been a private company, so I don't know how you would do that. Whitelink used to belong to British Rail, so maybe you could do that. But I'm more in favour of regulating the ferries in some way. What tends to happen, these companies, these big, vast pension conglomerates, they buy these companies, they make them more profitable, and then they sell them on to the next one, and so on and so forth. So all the time, there's more profit being made. It's more valuable to sell on. So they make a profit selling the company, and then the others make more profits, and so it goes on. That has to stop. So I would think perhaps putting some sort of levy on the profits. So some of the profits would have to be returned to the government of the day. I don't know what the percentage would be, but it would certainly trim that profit down and stop it being so attractive to another company. And then what would happen then is that the money that the government gets from that, they could then release back to the ferries with certain conditions for them to improve the services, because the service is also not as good as it used to be. I think Joe Robertson quoted that they used to be every half hour and now they're every hour or 2 hours, and sometimes they don't run at all. So the condition of the money being returned as a fund would then have strings attached, and that would be better service, better ferries, more frequent, and obviously better prices. So that's the kind of regulation that I would be looking at.
Thank you for outlining that. And it sounds almost, and do correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm only making an assumption just based on what you've told me, and I want you to just expand if you can. I was talking to Michael a moment ago, and he brought up the issue. In fact, I think he's the only candidate so far to bring up the link between the National Rail Service and almost adopting a similar model. I've not heard of that before, and it sounds as though what you're saying is that perhaps the solution we look at, they still make money, they still make a profit. Is that what you're arguing on your side of the camp here as an independent, that it's not that you're anti-business, that would be contradictory as you're a business owner.
Yeah.
It's about finding a solution that benefits all. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It says finding a solution that benefits all. To re-nationalise the ferry companies would be a very expensive operation to do. So if you can deal with the private companies and stop making them so attractive to sell on, because that's the problem. They've been owned by several companies and they keep changing hands every 2-3 years from one group to another, and you don't actually know who owns them sometimes. So I think that's what I would go for.
Thank you. So I want to move on then to housing. That's another key issue, actually, and I know we've briefly spoken about it within the cost of living crisis. As the Isle of Wight MP, if you're elected on Friday morning, and your in-tray, no doubt, whoever comes in is going to be filled up with housing inquiries. As you know, there's an 80% shortage of stock being unavailable. There's, I think, according to the Isle of Wight Council, it says here that 80% of its private stock will not be available for long-term lets and hasn't been available for long-term lets since the pandemic. And on top of that, rents have gone up. Average rents here have gone up to £815 a month. We already know, we've discussed earlier, the cost of living also being an ever-present issue. How do we solve this problem, David? How do we stop rents going out of control, and how do we solve this housing crisis?
Well, the big problem is interest rates went up and a lot of landlords left that particular market. So you're short, you've got a shortage of landlords. So then you've got a shortage of rented accommodation. I know somebody who's in rented accommodation, not particularly very good rented accommodation, has to be said. And, you know, they want to find somewhere else, and they find somewhere else, and 800 people before them have found somewhere else. And yes, you're quite right. The rents are £815 upwards. Now, you know, the particular one that I'm referring to, they've got, they're a young family, they've got two children. She's got a her child is only about 18 months old, so she hasn't been able to go back to work full time because of finding a nursery place. So they're basically living off one wage. That is really hard for them. So they're stuck in this awful accommodation, to be honest. It's got mould. The landlord's not good. So there needs to be rules on how landlords treat their tenants. There needs to be rules on how much they can charge those tenants, so maybe putting a cap on that. And there needs to be new builds. I think it was, again, mentioned by one of the other parties that maybe we should start building more social housing. I think the worst thing that ever happened, probably best thing for people who bought them, was selling off the council houses, because that immediately makes your stock shortage. And so that's why the island has a shortage. Now, we've got plenty of brown sites where you could build affordable housing or social housing. Also, I would build affordable housing as well for first-time buyers. And I would also introduce loans, government-backed loans for first-time buyers. They did it during the pandemic for businesses. They should do it for first-time buyers, to get them on the ladder. So there's all sorts of things you can do, and that's what I would advocate.
So what does affordable housing look like to you? I know that the official statistic is it's 20% off of whatever the going rate is. And some listeners at home might be thinking, well, that's not affordable. There could be someone in the kitchen right now that's doing dinner, or maybe they've just got in from home and they're listening in the car at the moment. What's your message to them around affordable housing? What do you define as affordable housing?
That's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, you look at the housing on the island and a lot of it isn't affordable, is it? So, yeah, the new builds would have to have some sort of cap on how much they were sold out to, sold on to. And again, with the government-backed mortgages, these young people getting onto that housing ladder would have it guaranteed. The repayments would be a lot less than what they're paying for rent. There would be, let's say, very low interest as well. So there would be government-backed, low-interest loans. That would make them affordable.
Thank you. Can I just quickly tackle head-on with you the issue of regulation? Because you've mentioned regulation on the ferries. You've mentioned regulation in a roundabout way on housing. Some people listening might be a little bit concerned, thinking, hold on a second, too much regulation. We don't want to be told what to do if we're landlords and business owners. I've got to put that case to you, because there will be listeners at home thinking, this makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't want to be told what to do. I thought we lived in a free market economy where we're free to make money and to grow our businesses. And now I'm being told that I've got to stop making money and I can't make as much money as I wanted to, because there's all this red tape now stopping me from being able to do that. Can you just reassure the person listening at home right now who might have that concern?
Well, I've actually very anti-regulations, because I run a business and there is far too much regulation. But sometimes regulation's a good thing. And I certainly think, regarding housing, where you've got a crisis, then you need to put something in place to regulate that, to make sure that everybody gets an equal play on, buying a house or renting a house. So I think in that respect, there does need to be regulation. I know there are good landlords, but there are also bad landlords as well. So you need that sort of regulation there. Regarding the ferries, you need to put some regulation there, because sometimes businesses like that start to take advantage. And I think regarding the ferries, I think they are taking advantage by charging too much. But regulation in general, no, I'm not a lover of it. I mean, one of the reasons we came out of the EU was to get rid of a lot of red tape. Well, the British people love red tape, and they always have done and always will do. You're never going to get rid of it. No, I'm not a lover of it, and I wouldn't overregulate anything, but you do need it. At times, you do need some.
So where do you draw the line then? Do you introduce it temporarily? Do you have regulation in the context of what we've been speaking about this afternoon? Where does that line get drawn? Do we stop regulating after a certain point? Do we use it almost as a bit of a threat almost? Or do we actually say, do you know what, I'm going to throw this regulation on this company or this organisation or this group of people and we're going to stick with it? Where's the line for you? Because you say that you're uncomfortable with it, but you have spoken about it quite a lot in the interview.
Yeah. With the ferries, if they were responsible and they were shown to be responsible, then I suppose you could say, right, OK, we're going to ease that regulation. But if you start to act up again, we'll reintroduce it. So it needs to be a little bit flexible. Regarding, you know, new builds, no, I think that that needs to stay in, because if we're serious about a shortage of housing, then we need to be serious about regulating that. But, there would be a line drawn under some of it.
Okay, thank you for that, David. I want to move on. We've only got about, I'd say, about 4 or 5 more minutes
Good heavens.
Left. It's sped by, I don't know it about has. You. I've said that quite a lot, actually, throughout the process of interviewing all of the candidates, that it's amazing how when you get in here, it is like a bit of a TARDIS.
It is.
I want to talk to you about health. It's really important on the island, and it's going to be an issue that affects a lot of people. I myself have been on the receiving end, thankfully not in a too serious manner, through the A&E service on the island, and it was incredibly good. My experience of it was wonderful in the sense where it was quite an emergency. It was dealt with really quickly and I was out within 24 hours. Of course, other people's perspectives and experiences are polar opposite and different. How do we solve that issue? How do we ensure that on the island we've got consistency in our healthcare? I'm talking not just on the receiving end as a patient, but also you hear lots of stories, don't you, about the dental crisis on the island, children in some instances not even being able to be seen by a dentist. What do we deal with first, and how do we go on moving forward with you as our MP if you're elected on Friday?
I think it's all part of being connected, isn't it? And with A&E, it all starts really with lack of GPs. And currently in Ventnor, we've got one full-time GP and 2 or 3 locums. I think that's how it works. And it's not enough. You can never get an appointment when you want one. So what do people do? They go to A&E. And what happens to A&E? It gets overworked. And then there's a shortage of beds. And we know what the rest is like. So what would I do? I'd sort out the GP for a start. We definitely need more GPs. We need more doctors to be encouraged to be general practitioners. More incentives to become a GP. I don't know why we have such a shortage, but we have. Obviously, the NHS needs a good shake-up from bottom to top. I would advocate getting a committee together in Parliament and getting all people from all sides, from the, let's say, from the porters right up to the surgeons, to be interviewed, to get their view. What would you do to save the NHS? Because the NHS is worth saving, I think. It's a large subject, but I'll go and touch on dentists, because currently, again, in Ventnor, the dentist I use is struggling. He's on his own. He has a partner, but he's only part-time. He broke his leg a few weeks ago. He worked the next day sitting down because he could not afford to take the time off. That is unacceptable. So we need more dentists. There are not enough dentist universities. There's not enough dentists being trained to come through. So we have a shortage of dentists and people can't get an NHS dentist. So definitely look at that one. Yeah.
I also think on this issue too, a lot of people might say, well, this all requires money, and money's the big issue. Tax is almost the dirty word in this election. Nobody's talking about it, and I've asked all the candidates this. According to the Resolution Foundation, there is, regardless of who gets elected, going to be a £33 billion shortfall. If you're elected as the MP for the Isle of Wight, what way are you going to go? Are you going to pull the lever that says we need to increase taxes, or are you going to pull the lever that says we need to reduce spending?
No, not reduce spending, because we've been down that road for the last 14 years. And I know people are afraid of saying the word. It's the elephant in the room. And I'm afraid you are going to have to increase taxes somewhere. Now, where you raise that is up for debate. But I would advocate raising taxes. I would put the tax threshold up to 20,000 to get people, the lower paid, out of that. But then I would hire the rate of tax that you pay after that. Not from the 20,000, that would stay the same. But the higher earners would have to pay more tax. You possibly would raise it through other means as well. There's so many taxes you could, but somewhere you've got to find that money. And I would advocate that taxes would have to rise. Not popular, but let's be sensible. I'm not talking about huge tax increases, but tax increases to stop all this spending reductions. But councils are lack of funding. That's why they're struggling, and that has to be changed.
Thank you, David. We've got about 60 or so seconds to go, so it's sped by. I want you to just outline your case, really. You may hear the clock start ticking in the background as well, and when the klaxon goes, that's it, I'm afraid. So just outline to us, why should Isle of Wight East voters go to you and put an X in the on the ballot sheet and put it in the ballot box on Thursday morning, afternoon, evening?
I am passionate about the island. I've lived here most of my life. I think the island is a beautiful place to live. I would certainly work my hardest to be their representative for the island. I would work hard. I would refer to the people all the time, be that contact. I'm looking forward to that challenge. So I very much want people to put that X in the spot for me and make some history. That's what I want people to do. Vote independent.
Thank you very much, David. David Grewcock there, independent candidate for Isle of Wight East. And just to let you know, all the other candidates that are standing in the Isle of Wight East constituency: Emily Brothers for the Labour Party, David Grewcock for independent, Michael Lilly for Liberal Democrats, Vix Lalvian for the Green Party, Sarah Morris for Reform UK, and Joe Robertson for the Conservative and Unionist Party. And a list of all of the candidates in the Isle of Wight East constituency can be found by going to vectisradio.com. Thank you very much, David, for your time evening. I know that it's a busy campaign schedule, and I will see you on Thursday, because we will be there broadcasting at the count for Vectis Radio.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Your community, your local station. We are your Vectis Radio. FM 104.6 and online at vectisradio.com.